Welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Justin Arner from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with one of my good friends, Dr. Christoph Offerhaus, all the way from Cologne, Germany. Christoph and I had the opportunity to become friends when he was an international fellow at the University of Pittsburgh, I think in 2017. So I'm looking forward to this discussion about his article, Evidence of Bacterial Metabolism in Synovial Fluid of Patients with Graft Failure After ACL Reconstruction, a Microbiological Comparison of Primary ACL and Hamstring Tendon Autograft Ruptures, which is in the Arthroscopy Journal this month in February of 2024. Thank you, Dr. Offerhaus, and thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. It's my pleasure and a great honor to be here. So thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting topic and something we really don't study enough. You know, it's not the classical, sexy graft type study, but these things are so important and such a devastating issue if people get an infection, these young, active patients. So tell us how you came up with this clinical question and idea.
Yeah, so actually the questions we wanted to ask to answer with this study came up in a previous research project I did with Professor Hoer when I was working at the Sports Clinic Cologne. So at this time, we had a kind of a little series of deep knee infections after ACL reconstruction. And therefore, we were investigating for a solution for this problem. And in this time, Christopher Vertullo just came up with his technique of vancomycin pre-soaking of the autograft. And so we adapted this technique and we observed our results with the, at these days, biggest clinical study on this topic. So the study included almost 2,000 patients over a period of 5 years and showed a significant reduction of post-op infection rate by this technique. But at the same time, we, like others, were concerned regarding a possible toxicity of vancomycin to the graft, which may lead to graft failure. So therefore, we also included as a parameter re-ruptures or graft failure rate into the study. And surprisingly, our results showed the exact opposite of effect. So it it showed that less re-ruptures or graft failure were obvious by the use of local vancomycin compared to the control group. So at this point, we developed a thesis of clinically occult infections or low-grade infections being the cause for early graft failure. And this wasn't anything new in orthopedics in this moment, because the problem of clinically occult infections is a well-known problem also in other areas of orthopedics, for example, in septic fracture non-union or periprosthetic joint infections. But there are or there were no data on low-grade infections after ACL reconstruction. And this is why we performed this study.
Yeah, that's a great summary and I appreciate you summarizing the results of vancomycin and everything, because I think that's an important thing that we need to think probably more about. One thing I was really impressed with your study is that the design and explanation of it in your paper was really excellent. You included every detail. You know, a lot of papers don't have all those details. Really, truly, you could reproduce your study with the details you have in the methods. Tell us a little bit about your study design and how you took these samples and how you guys decided all that.
Yes, thank you. And a large part of this praise indeed does belong to my co-author, Natalie Asmati. She's a good friend of mine. She's a great microbiologist. And it was mainly with her that I developed the study design. And this time she almost annoyed me being, bean counter? when planning the study. And also when writing the paper, but we are still friends. And now going back to serious talk, I think this detailed approach is really essential for such a study. And it's also essential for the reader, because otherwise it is almost impossible to distinguish whether the results are real infections or contamination that happened at some point of the procedure of the study. So this is also a real shortcoming of the few studies that have been previously published on this topic. And perhaps we can come back later in this podcast to discuss this, because this is a very interesting point in my opinion. But yeah, first back to the study design you asked me about. So we prospectively collected tissue samples of failed ACL grafts, which served as our case group. And these samples were examined for evidence of bacterial colonization and compared to tissue samples of the native ACL in a primary ACL rupture, which served as our control group. And yeah, for sure, we also had a couple of exclusion criteria like history of knee joint infection, diabetes mellitus, cortisone intake, or also antibiotic intake in the past 3 months. And for the ACL group, additionally, any previous surgery to the injured knee joint counted as an exclusion criteria. We took the samples right at the beginning of the arthroscopy, and these samples were graft remnants in the case group, respectively the remnants of the native ACL in the control group. And we divided this harvested tissue into 5 samples. 3 of these tissue samples were individually subjected to microbiological culturing, 1 to PCR analysis, and 1 to histopathological examination.
Yeah, that's a great summary, and it's pretty funny. You guys are still friends. I'm happy about that because it is hard.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, we're different types of colleagues, so it's good when you can collaborate like that. It's important. Both sides are so important for a unique study like this. So tell us what you tested in the synovial fluid. You know, the PCR that you mentioned is interesting. I'd like to talk more about that later, but tell us what you did to the samples exactly.
So before the procedure, but already in the OR after disinfection, we did a knee joint punction to obtain synovial fluid. And half of this fluid was transferred to microbiological culturing, and the other half was sent for a classical analysis, including cell counting, glucose, lactate, and protein. And the idea of testing the synovial fluid was to potentially identify possible biomarkers for an infection, which, yeah, we in the end indeed succeeded.
Yeah, that's great. So one thing, you know, you alluded to and we talked about before is determining what's considered an infection. And you really elegantly put out in your paper, it's really quite complicated with skin flora and having multiple samples. Tell us about how you considered what you determined an infection in the study.
Yes, this actually is a very, very important part of the whole discussion around this topic. With such a high number of tissue samples, so in our study, it were around 500 samples, as well as the high sensitive procedures we are using, a certain percentage of iatrogenic contamination is to be expected during sample collection and further processing in the laboratory. So therefore, we applied a very strict definition of a low-grade infection, especially when compared to the few other studies on this topic. So when we found skin commensal, such like the typical coagulase negative staphylococci, a patient was considered positive in terms of low-grade infection if at least 2 out of the 3 cultures showed the same pathogen, the same bacteria. That means that growth of a skin commensal in only 1 culture, or also the growth of different skin commensals in different cultures of the same patient, were considered as microbiological colonization or a contamination. So unless the histopathological examination showed clear signs of an infection. And yeah, this definition is based on the recommendations by the Infectious Disease Society of America. And just to mention, if 1 culture would have shown a strict pathogen such as Staphylococcus aureus, Pseudomonas, Enterobactericae, it also would have been considered an infection, but this was not the case in any patient.
That's a great explanation, something that we really should keep in mind with this skin flora. It does get somewhat confusing sometimes. So tell us about the results of your study. There are a lot of interesting ones, I think.
Yeah. I think the most important finding is that we found evidence for bacteria in the ruptured graft and the synovial fluid of patients after ACL reconstruction. And I think the highlight is, of course, the significant differences from the examination of the synovial fluid. So in particular, a significantly higher percentage of polymorphonuclear leukocytes or granulocytes was detected in the synovial fluid of the graft group. We know from from studies on periprosthetic joint infections that PMN percentage is the most sensitive marker for joint infection. And also glucose levels were significantly lower in the revision group, which can also what also can be seen as a sign of bacterial metabolism. And nevertheless, the examination of the tissue samples also showed a clear trend towards increased bacterial growth in the transplant group, although we have to admit that these differences were not significant.
Yeah, I think that's really important about the bacterial load and the synovial fluid and the PMNs. I think it's a good explanation. You know, one thing that we all know is that there's been some hamstring data about infection. I was just curious, what are your thoughts if we would have tried another graft like a BTB? Do you think that would have changed your results at all?
Yeah, it's like you said, we know from previous studies that especially hamstring tendon autografts are prone to bacterial contamination and postoperative deep knee infection. So this might be due to their bigger surface, as it is a quadruple transplant, as well as longer preparation time needed, more sutures needed, etc. So for sure, I think in the same way, like deep knee infection differs between the different transplants, also our results would have been different with other autografts. But yeah, talking about different autografts, I think there would be another thing that would be very interesting to investigate. And that would be to do this study, including allografts. So in Germany, we nearly don't use allografts because we do not have easy access to fresh frozen allografts due to political or legal restrictions. So as you said before, with our methods, it's easy to rebuild our study. So maybe you guys in Pittsburgh could perform this study comparing native ACL with autografts and allografts. So maybe you go for it. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, I'll steal that idea. I'll put you in the comments that you gave me advice. But no
comments, comments or co-author. So we discuss this later.
Yeah, yeah. It's unfortunately this is being recorded, so other people will find out about this. I can't hide it. So in your discussion, you really nicely point out the difficulties that I mentioned before, you know, with PCR analysis and culture and bacterial detection. You know, I didn't really know much about that, so this educated me. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we discussed this topic because in our opinion, this is one of the shortcomings of the previous studies, the few previous studies done on this topic. They all rely on PCR analysis, but there's a big problem with PCR because it is not a completely standardized method. So we have heterogeneous procedures in the different laboratories, and it highly depends on the primer you are choosing to detect the DNA. So there are large microbiological multicenter studies that prove the lack of sensitivity of PCR analysis when compared to culturing. And this is something I think we orthopedic surgeons often ignore because we think PCR is the most sensitive way to detect bacteria, but it's not. And for sure, you can do PCR with a universal primer to improve your sensitivity, but then you are very prone to false positive results, especially if you do not do a subsequent sequencing. And yeah, this was not done in the previous studies. But just knowing that you found bacterial DNA without knowing the exact species is of little clinical relevance because from microbiome studies, we know that bacterial DNA can even be detected in blood or other tissues that are considered to be sterile. So, and last but not least, in our study, we were looking like for a true or alive, or I don't know how to call it, active, although clinical inapparent, but active bacterial colonization or occupation, and not just for, let's call it, dead bacterial DNA.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that. So it's great education for us reading this study because you just think higher technology, maybe better sensitivity, but it's more complicated than that.
I have been educated by my friend.
Yeah, good. You sound like you know what you're talking about. You know, since you're such an expert on this topic, it was a great explanation you did with the vancomycin, but can you just tell us a little bit more about what other studies you've kind of alluded to those that are out there on topics like this and how your study differs and what it adds to the literature?
Yeah, for sure. The Flanagan group in Ohio is doing the most, or yeah, let's say even the only research on this topic. And in their first study that was published in 2018, they reported the detection of bacterial DNA in failed ACL grafts. That was, I think, 87% of cases. But their study was performed with the methods shortcomings, or the shortcomings of their methods I described before. So they only relied on PCR analysis with a universal primer. And this becomes evident when looking at their results. So they have 31 samples, and in these 31 samples, they have 87% of PCR positivity, but just one positive sample in culturing. And they compared these results to 5 samples of native ACL, which also detected bacteria in one case, which means in 20% of native ACL. So I think our study is different in terms of that we used a very, very detailed microbiological methods. It was the first that cultured multiple samples, although this is a very easy method of this multiple sampling. This is very common in microbiological to improve the sensitivity. And as I mentioned before, we were not just looking for bacterial DNA, but we looked for evidence for true active bacterial colonization. Because in our belief, bacteria contribute to graft failure, not just because of their pure presence, but also because of their metabolism and the human immune response to bacteria and the immune response to bacterial metabolism. So, therefore, in our study, we additionally looked for possible signs for this bacterial metabolism by analyzing the synovial fluid. And this also haven't done before yet. And and there are two new studies of the Ohio group, and our results and this belief is coherent to what the new studies recently found. Unfortunately, we did not mention these studies in our article because they weren't published yet in the moment we wrote our paper. In two laboratory studies, they found evidence for the thesis that low-grade infections or indolent bacterial growth weakens the mechanical properties of an ACL graft. They showed that bacterial microbiomes on soft tissue grafts histologically change the crimp patterns of collagen, and this weakens the graft with lower load to failure. So these are two very beautiful studies, very new studies on this topic.
That's really interesting. We're getting the most up-to-date information, and I didn't realize that data about the collagen. That's interesting stuff. So, you know, the question I'm sure all of us are kind of thinking that are listening to this, and as we talk and I read your paper, give us an idea of the clinical implications of this study. Do you test synovial fluid in your revision ACLs? Do you take biopsies? Tell us what you think this should change in our practice.
Yeah, indeed, one of the clinical implications of our study could be to frequently test the synovial fluid before revision ACL surgery. Like it is, for example, common praxis before revision arthroplasty. But to date, there are no thresholds that would indicate a certain procedure. So, for example, in our study, the absolute values of PMN per centure were above the references for non-inflammatory knee, but also far below the thresholds used to detect prosthetic joint infections, for example. But yes, awareness of possible low-grade infections as a cause of persistent problems after ACL reconstruction, like pain or swelling, and as a possible cause of graft failure, has increased in our clinic since we did this study. The results of a knee joint puncture are also increasingly being taken into account when deciding whether a one-stage replacement or a bone tunnel filling can be formed, or whether infection treatment is required first.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mark Philippon, when I was in fellowship in Vail, he would always take biopsies when he did a revision hip arthroscopy, which I think is a good point. You know, we don't think about this because it's lower chances, and I guess less morbid, and maybe they're indolent infections, but you know, with revision shoulder instability, or, you know, someone that had a capsular shift in the past and you're converting them to a Arthroplasty, maybe it's an important thing we really should look at because it's the last thing we want to progress with. So one thing, you know, people have talked about before and you're obviously an expert with is tunnel widening with infection and subclinical infection leading to risk factor of ACL failure. Do you think that might be a high risk of one of the reasons that ACL reconstructions fail is infection after going so deep into this dive in your great study here?
Yeah, I personally think that tunnel widening is the result of a non-anatomical ACL reconstruction rather than of subclinical infection. But yeah, still there might be a correlation and there is some evidence. But yeah, as I told before, there is some questionable shortcomings in the method sections of this literature.
Yeah. So do you think subclinical infection may be a risk factor for failure of ACL reconstructions?
Absolutely, yes. For sure, graft failure always can be the result of multiple factors, especially mechanical factors like tunnel malpositioning or tibial slope, etc. But still, with all the efforts to eliminate these factors over the last decades, we still see a very high rate of graft failure up to around 20% in certain patient groups. So I strongly believe that we underestimate the importance of biological factors contributing to graft failure. And one of these factors could be subclinical infections.
Yeah, I think you're right. How do you think we can improve these infection rates? You know, you mentioned the vancomycin soaking. I'm assuming that you're a pro vancomycin soaking, but tell us other thoughts and way we can decrease infection risk.
Yeah, I think with all the vancomycin studies of the last decade, pre-soaking the graft is an absolutely must do. Of course, we must not forget all the usual infection prevention measures, but I believe it is an illusion that we work aseptically. So we have to be aware that despite all the disinfection and all the other measures, we only achieve antisepsis. And regarding this topic, we also recently published a study in KSSTA showing a very, very high contamination rate of semitendinosus tendons that are harvested for ACL reconstruction. For that, we used a method similar to that we used in the study we are discussing here. We examined semitendinosus tendons that were harvested for ACL reconstruction, and we examined them for bacterial growth using, again, culture and PCR. And taken together, some form of bacterial colonization was detected on the harvested graft in over 40% of patients. And if you now consider that only a few centimeters of a tendon that normally is over 20 centimeters long were examined, it can be assumed that we potentially introduce bacteria into the knee joint with every ACL reconstruction we do when using autograft. And so summarizing this, we have a clear evidence for the significant reduction of postoperative knee infection by the use of local vancomycin. And we have a growing number of indications that clinically occult infections may contribute to graft failure, which also can be reduced by the use of vancomycin. And we have evidence for a high contamination rates of autografts during graft harvest. So I do vancomycin resoaking of the graft in every case of ACL reconstruction.
Yeah, it's a great summary and interesting, the new data you're talking about. I wasn't aware of that. So tell us, what are the next steps to try to tease out any causal relationship with infection and failure? I know, like we mentioned, tunnel widening maybe is less likely, but how do we figure that out?
Yeah, this is indeed a good question that I will not answer in any detail because this is exactly what we are currently working on.
We want some detail.
Yeah, I'll give you an idea. We already see in this podcast that the main problem with these studies is that we are looking for a very low concentration of bacteria. So actually now with our definition, we were looking for a low-grade infection that is defined by what I told before. 2 out of 3 samples have to show the same bacteria. But actually, it's also our belief that's also, let's say, an colonization or occupation of the transplant or the tissue with very, very low concentrations of bacteria that do not match the definition of a low-grade infection could nevertheless lead to changes of the intra-articular environment. And this already can contribute to graft failure. But the problem with detecting these little amounts of bacteria is that we never know if this, what we see, is a true colonization that has been in the knee joint, or if we are just detecting with our highly sensitive methods a contamination that happened in all the proceeding after harvesting the samples. I hope this is understandable. So
that's great.
Yeah, actually, we can see already in our investigation that we also detected bacteria in the native ACL. And I think we all know or believe that this has to be in contamination. But then also we have an odds ratio showing grafts to be 3 times more likely to show bacterial growth. And this, together with the signs of bacterial metabolism that are significantly higher in the transplant groups, indicates that there are bacteria in the joint of the revision group, although the results of these tissue samples were not significant in our study. But the reason for this may more likely be the limitations of our current routine diagnostic tools, which are unable to distinguish clinically inapparent bacterial occupation from contamination during or and after surgery. Yeah, and I think this is the main challenge in this topic, to find a way to prove that these bacteria are the result of a colonization and not a contamination. But yeah, the problem is that we are looking for a very small amount of bacteria. We are searching with a very highly sensitive method, and therefore we are very prone to such contaminations. And yes, this is the big problems in this topic. And actually, we are right now working on a way to solve these problems. We think we found a way to solve this problem, and yeah, we are working on that.
That's great.
But there's also another thing. The next problem then will be to describe in which percentage or in which amount such a colonialization contributes to graft failure, because this, for example, was one of the limitations of our study, that we did not eliminate other contributing factors like tibial slope, tunnel mile positioning, and all the other factors that also contribute to graft failure. So it will be difficult to distinguish whether a graft failure is a result of the mechanical problems or the biological issues. And so in our study, we included all patients because we wanted to get the first hint or a first hint that there is some correlation between bacterial presence and graft failure. But now there will be the need for bigger cohorts in which we need to eliminate all the other contributing factors and to pick out these patients that we also know from our clinics where everything is fine, slope is good, tunnels are good, everything is perfect. The patient didn't have another obvious trauma, but still develops graft insufficiency. So these might be the patients where we can prove that there is a relationship between bacterial occupation and graft failure.
Yeah, that's awesome. What a great summary. Very well spoken and thought out. And I can't wait to see the results of this. And sounds like some interesting new technology. And, you know, it definitely drives us crazy if you have a patient like this that it's a well-done surgery, you can't find anything, and it's just this atraumatic failure in these young people. So it's an important topic, and appreciate you pushing the envelope forward, Christoph.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, I'm really happy to talk to you, and this is a really nice summary, and you educated all of us. So thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. It was a great pleasure, and it's a big honor for me to do this podcast with you.
Well, thank you. Dr. Offerhaus's article titled "Evidence of Bacterial Metabolism in Synovial Fluid of Patients with Graft Failure After ACL Reconstruction, a Microbiological Comparison of Primary ACL and Hamstring Tendon Autograft Ruptures" is in the February 2024 issue of the Arthroscopy Journal and is available online at arthroscopyjournal.org. Thank you so much for joining us. This concludes this edition of the Arthroscopy Journal podcast. The views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of the Arthroscopy Association or the Arthroscopy Journal. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next time.